It's time for some fresh air. So start packing, put on some sunscreen, and grab your favorite walking stick. This is WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Rob Jansen, he's executive director of Wisconsin State Golf Association, who joins us on the phone. Let's just get to it. I always like to baseline it for folks. What does the Wisconsin State Golf Association do?
Yeah, so we're a nonprofit golf association. Our mission's to promote the game of golf in Wisconsin. So pretty simple and straightforward, but it's a lot of fun for us and a privilege to get to do it, especially in a great golf state like Wisconsin. The main and most visible services we provide, number one, we run golf tournaments for players of all abilities. We're up to running over 100 events annually. Wow. In a pretty short golf season. Anything from one-day net events and scramble events up to our four-day Wisconsin State Amateur Championship. We also provide services to individual golfers. These are people who just love golf, can't get enough golf. We provide handicap indexes, which measure your kind of golf ability and allow you to play fairly against other players, something kind of very unique and special about golf, as well as a great slate of other benefits for golfers. And then we provide services to courses. We measure and rate golf courses, provide advice, kind of serve as the governing body of golf in Wisconsin, you know, rules and everything that goes along with that. So keeps us busy for sure.
That rules thing just prompted me to ask you, have the rules of golf changed that much?
Yeah, they keep kind of evolving. There was a pretty big change a few years ago, kind of a big rules modernization project, the USGA called it, just to try to simplify and streamline the rules as much as possible. But it can be a complicated game when it comes to all the things that can happen, especially when you're playing outdoors and in nature and trying to keep the game kind of, fair and reasonable. But that makes it very, very complex as well. So, they did their best to kind of simplify it and make things a little easier to understand and eliminate a lot of, kind of ticky-tacky type penalties that players didn't even try to do or intend to do that they would still be penalized pretty severely for. And, as AI continues to infiltrate the world, I think we're seeing that come into the rules of golf here pretty soon as well. I know they're working on some kind of cool technologies and app-based stuff. So as you're playing golf, you'll be able to get some pretty quick and easy answers when it comes to, oh my gosh, this just happened to my golf ball. What do I do? And there'll be, some sort of bot that can help you out pretty quickly.
All right. Really specific thing. This happened to me probably about 5 years ago. Now I'm playing, I think it was Racine Country Club or one of the courses down there. A coyote ran across, picked up my ball and ran. It was in the fairway, which thank God it was in the fairway. Picked up my ball and ran off with it. What's the ruling there?
Yeah, no penalty for you. That stuff's going to happen. You just kind of replace your golf ball and keep on playing. But those are things that, I read about and we study, we get tested on. And I'm like, that's never going to happen.
Oh, it
happens. I've never seen those happen. So I love when I hear them actually happening and can put my rules knowledge to use.
I'm glad I did it the right way. So I got a drop right where the ball was. We estimated because we were on the tee, so you sort of figure out where that is. And I got a birdie on the hole, so it all worked out in my favor. So how about that? All right. So the other one is, what is the relationship between Wisconsin State Golf Association and the national organization? I would assume you work together on a lot of things, right?
Yeah, so we work most closely with the USGA, the United States Golf Association. There's other golf entities in the state. It's a bit of alphabet soup for people not familiar, but you have the Wisconsin PGA section. Mm-hmm. They're most closely involved with the PGA of America and a few other entities, First Tee and golf course owners and others. But we work most closely with the USGA. They run, the U.S. Open, U.S. Women's Open, kind of the governing body of golf, and we're their boots on the ground, so to speak, here in Wisconsin, running qualifiers for their biggest national championships, including the U.S. Open. To play in the U.S. Open, it starts with a local qualifier here in Wisconsin for anybody who's basically a scratch golfer with a dream to play in the U.S. Open. We kind of run that that first qualifier to get you to the next stage, and then you got to perform there to to make it into the big show. But yeah, it's a great relationship. You know, really proud to be, you know, associated with the USGA, and you know, do some good things here in Wisconsin, working closely with them.
Rob Jansen, Executive Director of the Wisconsin State Golf Association, joining us on WTMJ Outdoors. Real quick, we're going to go to break, but I want to give you a chance to, if folks want to find out more about your organization, some of the things that you talked about, the state amateur, all the cool stuff you do, what's the best way to find you?
Yeah, best way to find us is online, WSJ.org is our website. You can check out all the great events we run. You can join the association, look at the golf course directory, and kind of get your golf fix, or social media as well, WSJ Golf on most social media platforms.
All right, I'll take a quick break here on WTMJ Outdoors. Thanks to Outdoor Living Unlimited for making it all possible. We'll be back after this on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Our guest in an all-golf edition of WTMJ Outdoors, Rob Jansen, Executive Director with Wisconsin State Golf Association. I think we talked about this last time, Rob. There's sort of an absence on the men's side of any really high-profile events, but that's not the case when you're talking about women in the state of Wisconsin. Can you highlight a couple of things that might be happening this year or in the next few years?
Yeah, so obviously Wisconsin had an incredible run of some pretty major golf events coming to the state, U.S. Open, Ryder Cup, U.S. Senior Open, and that run kind of ended last year with the U.S. Women's Open at Erin Hills. So a great run of professional golf, bringing, you know, all the greatest players in the world here to Wisconsin. Now things kind of shift more to the amateur game, and Wisconsin has super impressive and busy lineup of national amateur championships coming to Wisconsin. Like you said, men, women, juniors, we've got it all coming to Wisconsin. We have, starting this year, 14 national championships coming to Wisconsin over the next 14 years. And that kicks off this year with the U.S. Mid-Amateur Championship at Toledo up at Sand Valley, mm-hmm. and then rolls right into some, you know, amateur four-ball championships for kind of a partner event, and then a U.S. Amateur, and then you get into, you know, women's four-ball and women's amateur, you know, kind of into the 2030s. So it's a long, impressive run of some, you know, really high-level golf that's coming to the state, and events that don't draw the huge crowds that the, you know, big professional majors draw, but still have, you know, a nice economic impact for the state, bringing people in from all over the country, showcasing our top courses. So they're really, really special events that we're lucky to have coming up.
Why do you think, I mean, you talked about the high-profile stuff, obviously the Ryder Cup was like the gem, because not everybody gets that. But why do you think Wisconsin is such a destination place for these high-profile events, whether you're talking professional or amateur?
Yeah, it starts with the golf courses. I mean, just the quality of golf we have here in Wisconsin is really unmatched on the public side. You know, Golf Digest proclaimed Wisconsin the number one state for public golf. So that's a title we proudly hold at the moment. Such great golf courses, and that's what draws all these events. You're not going to attract those major championships without literally world-class golf facilities. And we have the added benefit here in Wisconsin of those courses being public access. So people can see those events, watch them on TV, and then come out and play them, make it a week-long trip or more, and play as many of them as possible. And, you know, just a really passionate state for golf, a really supportive state. So the governing bodies that run these events, they know when they come to Wisconsin, they're going to have the support of everyone in the state. They're going to sell out volunteer registration as soon as it opens. They're going to sell tickets. They're going to have enthusiastic and knowledgeable crowds. So it's just a great recipe for successful, not only professional events, but national amateur events as well.
Rob Jansen joining us, Executive Director of Wisconsin State Golf Association, here on WTMJ Outdoors on 620 WTMJ. I always am curious about the individual. So you lead a great golf organization, one of the best. I mean, you talked about the great ranking that we have in the state of Wisconsin. So for you as a, you know, that's your job, but the personal side of golf, how do you get out there? How do you enjoy the game?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, there's a common mantra that if you want to play golf, don't work in golf, because, you know, it's your job, and then you don't have the time to kind of play it and enjoy it on a personal level. And I've kind of struggled with that over my 15 years with the WSGA, but I've kind of settled into my sweet spot, I think, of I think I'm better at my job and enjoy my job more when I'm playing golf and just kind of out there and, you know, able to enjoy the game and meet people and say yes to rounds of golf. It just kind of keeps me more energized and excited about the game. So, yeah, I've been trying to play more golf myself. I probably hit about 40 rounds last year, which is a good number, getting out, you know, at least kind of once a week on average for a proper 18-hole round that I'm able to post to my handicap account. And and then on top of that, my kids are getting a little older. They're 8 and 11 now, so able to kind of come out on the weekends and enjoy hitting some balls on the range or playing a couple holes with me or doing it as a family, as my wife has started to play golf as well, which has been really fun. So a lot of golf experiences on top of those rounds as well, and you know, get invited to play in a few, you know, outings or pro-ams and fun things. So yeah, I try to say yes as much as I can to playing golf. There are times where, hey, the job comes first and just no time to play in a given week, just busy with our own events or activities. But there's always time to fit some golf in, and always enjoy getting on the golf course and playing myself.
Well, Rob, I always enjoy the conversation. If folks want to find out more about the Wisconsin State Golf Association, how do they do that?
Yeah, they can visit us at our website, wsj.org. Easy to join and be a part of what we call Wisconsin's largest golf community, and kind of check out what we do and, the ways we promote golf in Wisconsin. So, we appreciate everyone who plays and enjoys the game throughout the state.
All right, hit them straight, and I'll add this, hit them often, because with 40-plus rounds, maybe you can go over 50 this year.
That's a good goal. I love it.
All right. He is Rob Jansen, Executive Director of the Wisconsin State Golf Association, on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors. Lots of great conversations about the great Wisconsin outdoors. This one, I got to admit, I don't have a lot of knowledge of, but I have friends. My friend Jeremy's big into the inside rock climbing experience. Wall climbing, I guess, is more accurate. But I said, you know, as we're putting this show together, let's find people who are like subject matter experts on it. We got a good one today. Jacob Krohn, President, Wisconsin Climbers. Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors.
Hey, thank you very much, Stephen. I'm happy to be here and, happy to talk about climbing. I love it.
So, for those of us who don't climb, other than maybe a tree when I was, you know, 12 years old, what is it about climbing that just has like inspired people to like take this up? We were talking before we started about, you know, how many people are moving into it. Give us some of the numbers. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I think you did hit the point on the head. It's a natural thing to do. Everyone climbs trees. Everyone wants to explore as a child, but at some point, you know, the world gets a little smaller and you get a little bigger and that kind of adventure can get lost. But I've definitely found that again in rock climbing, and a lot of other people have too. The Access Fund, which is a climbing organization to help access different areas. They're also partners of the LCO, or local climbing organization, the WCA, Wisconsin Climbers Association. They measured, estimated 150,000 climbers in 2000. And their last study of that was 8 million climbers in 2023.
So what happened? Why is it? Is it because the kids are getting exposed to it on those rock climbing walls, or what is it?
I think it's a really awesome balance of perspective and perseverance and physical engagement. And for me, you know, it demands my attention so much that my, you know, more scattered brain really, you know, puts everything else out and brings me into that moment.
People have described it to me that do this, both inside and outside, as life-changing. Not one, just from the physical aspects of it. I mean, you're a fit guy. You're in shape. But also just from the clearing your headspace, like getting, especially if you're doing outside stuff, which is we're going to spend some time talking about, it just changes your life, and it changed your life.
Yeah, it absolutely did. you know, historically, I lived a pretty sedentary life. I didn't start climbing until I was 25. And prior to that, had some challenges with drug and alcohol abuse and, you know, had to get in recovery for that. At a certain point, I felt a little stagnant, you know, sitting around the rooms with filled with smoke and doing that thing. And I wanted to do something unique with my life while I had the opportunity to. And I found that in climbing. I had worked next to a climbing gym earlier on, and I always thought those people looked pretty happy and energetic. I might as well check it out. And since then, it's really been an incredible journey for me. I've been climbing for about 10 years now, and the kind of demand that it takes of the body, your mind, as well as being stable in life, all kind of come together in this really engaging physical movement that just is so motivating for me.
We've all seen and watched these stories of rock climbers. I think it's called free climbing. Just incredible, you know, mountains and peaks that these people, without any really attachment, I can't even imagine what the mental commitment of that is, let alone the physical requirements and just the fear factor. I mean, have you experienced some of that stuff?
Yeah, it's been a really good opportunity in life to practice taking healthy risks. You know, if we don't take any risks, we're not going to do anything that interesting. But all climbing has some risk involved. We use ropes to mitigate those risks or bouldering pads. The first means of defense against hitting the ground is always your movement, but it's fallible. So, you know, we learn to be aware of ourselves and our capabilities and take the necessary precautions to keep ourselves safe.
I want to talk about the inside-outside stuff, but I want to make sure that we talk about your organization, Wisconsin Climbers Association. Tell me about how that started, where it's gone in the time, in this rapid increase in interest in climbing, and tell me a little bit of that story.
Thank you, Stephen. We started as an organization around an event called the Boulder Bash, where we got a bunch of crash pads together and brought people together for an event at Governor Dodge State Park. We get a ton of great use out of the state parks in Wisconsin here. And then since then, we became the local climbing organization and a nonprofit. Now we really work in climbing access and stewardship, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. We have a grant program through that, which we've probably given about $10,000 through, and you know, and our event planning. And we've done a lot of great work with a lot of great people to make it accessible and fun adventure.
I want to give you a chance a couple times to tell people how they can reach out and find you. So the easiest way to get a hold of you guys?
Yeah, you can send us an email at info@wiclimbersplural.com. Otherwise, you can search for us online at Wisconsin Climbers Association.
So you mentioned Wisconsin, and I, you know, some of the things I've seen about climbing involve some of the big, you know, Pacific Northwest, and certainly the mountainous part of the Western United States. How does Wisconsin, obviously a lot of people know about Devil's Lake State Park, I've camped there. Are we considered a great place to climb or no?
Yeah, we definitely don't have the big mountains like they have out west, or at least since the glaciers came through, which was a little before my time. But we have some very good quality single pitch rock climbing in Wisconsin.
What does that mean, single pitch?
That's essentially the amount you can climb with a single length of rope and lower back down to the ground. So climbs are typically between 50 and 100 feet, some of the taller ones being at in Wisconsin areas like Devil's Lake. There are amazing climbing opportunities all over Wisconsin. Our economic impact studies focused on Devil's Lake, but there's a lot of state parks as well as county parks. There's Governor Dodge, Rib Mountain, and boulder fields all over Wisconsin that offer great opportunities to get into climbing and explore the outdoors.
Can someone be a beginner rock climber, someone who's maybe fit but hasn't, you know, experienced, you know, what it feels like to climb up a side of a mountain or a cliff? Can you be a beginner in rock climbing, and how does that process work?
Everyone starts somewhere. Like, I wish I would have gotten an earlier start, but it's never too late. I guide professionally, and I always tell clients that as long as you can hike up the steps to get there, you can climb something. After that, it's just about finding the right challenge for you, and there's just a broad spectrum of climbs that you can do.
We're joined by Jacob Krohn, president of Wisconsin Climbers. You can find them at, what was that website again?
WIClimbers.com.
All right. Well, take a break. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors. After the break, I got some stories about my grandkids and their climbing, and a funny story about a friend who's building his dream house. and has a rock climbing wall in it. I'm going to ask Jacob about that and just the explosion of popularity when it comes to rock climbing. As I said, you're listening to WTMJ Outdoors on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, enjoying everything that's awesome and exceptional about Wisconsin's great outdoors, recreational things and hunting and fishing. Today we're talking about rock climbing. My guest, Jacob Krohn, president of the Wisconsin Climbers Association. All right. I told you the story during the break. I have grandkids who are already doing rock climbing. They have them on their play sets. I went to my buddy. He's building his dream house in the city I live in. And I see this large wall in one of his bedrooms. And I ask him, there's a vault. There's a like a vaulted area up there. What's that about? I'm putting in a 20-foot rock climbing wall. I mean,
that's awesome.
You can certainly see like the popularity is like drifting down to little kids. He's doing it for his grandkids. My granddaughter Charlie's climbing up on her play set that has the whole hand holes and the footholds. This thing is really catching on at a younger and younger ages, which I think has to be part of this story, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The huge growth in number of climbers is definitely from youth getting into it. Climbing gyms have been a big part of that, but there are great outdoor opportunities all over the state as well. I think it's great for children because it teaches them to be responsible for their actions. You can only watch a kid so much, but gravity's always working. So, you know, if they take a bump, they'll learn from that and know that, you know, you need to make good choices in your life. And that's worked for me really well in other aspects and been a good thing to model. But I think that's something more tangible kids can work with.
Calculated risk, but also safety first and foremost. I think that's my takeaways from just looking at a few things about rock climbing.
Absolutely.
Climbing anything, really.
We're always assessing our risk when we're climbing. And that, you know, if that's in a gym or a home wall made out of plywood or outdoor. We're making those decisions all the time, and we should be responsible like that in our daily lives as well.
You were telling me before we started that you were a part of a documentary about climbing.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to work with Heave Ho Productions out of Chicago. They came up and wanted to explore Devil's Lake, my history with alcohol and drug addiction, and overcoming that with help from rock climbing was something that they found inspiring, and got to spend 4 days shooting with them, and it was a ton of fun. And
your organization and climbers in Wisconsin in general, are they, I know we talked a little bit about the state ranking and how we would fit in. How about the skill level of our climbers here? Are we, I know there's some competitions. Do you ever get involved in those things?
Yeah, there are some competitions. The Boulder Bash is like a friendly competition, and I've participated in WCA's trad climbing competition, the Alt-A Classic, a couple of times. As far as the quality and the caliber of climbers we have, one person I think said it best, that when you climb in the Midwest, the grades are stiff and the ground's always close. If you know, you need to place things well and choose your moves carefully because you're not 1,000 feet off the ground. In the Midwest, if you make a mistake, that ground is pretty close to find you. So there's a lifetime of climbing in Devil's Lake, and some really strong climbers come out of here.
When you're climbing a rock face, and let's say you're 3/4 of the way up, and what's the highest in Wisconsin, a couple hundred feet?
100, 150 feet is about as tall.
What's going through your mind? Is it all technical, or is there like a peacefulness? I always thought, you know, if you're hanging on the side of one, I'd be worried about it because I'm not a climber. But two, it's got to be like this moment of peaceful serenity up there because you're out in nature. You're hanging on the side of a cliff that's been there for hundreds of thousands of years. That's got to be amazing.
Yeah, I love climbing the natural formations. They've been here for hundreds of millions of years, and you know, I get to come back year after year to test my mettle against them. But what I get from that experience is a bookmark to kind of see how my growth has been going, as well as engage with the environment in this very hands-on and very focused aspect. My dad's a truck driver, and I grew up taking trips with him, so I saw a lot of beautiful areas from the side of the road, and taking the opportunity to really get close up and interact with the environment has been just an incredible piece, as well as the activity itself providing that mental focus that can sometimes be hard to get.
What do you think's next for you in climbing?
what's next for me is I'm just going to try to travel and do as much as I can. I ice climb a bit in the winter.
How much different is that?
It's almost two different sports. Fortunately, a lot of the technical systems are the same. So if you learn one, you learn some from the other, but it's a different ballpark.
All right. So I want this to appeal to those who are, maybe they've had the exposure I was talking about where you see these kids play things and now you, every kid's recreational facility puts a wall climb in it. If people want to get involved, like other than obviously, and we'll give you have you give your numbers out for your association in a second. What should they be thinking about? Like, is there equipment they need? Are there shoes they need? Like, what's the resources, assets they need to sort of start that journey?
Yeah, typically the best access to start would be through a climbing gym. There are a few in Milwaukee, Madison, as well as a new one up in Green Bay. So there's those resources. But if you know anyone who climbs, it takes a certain kind of focus and determination to climb. So usually those people like company when they're doing it. So if you know anyone that you can get connected with, let them know. And, you know, we're a resource to help get people the equipment that they need because we rent bouldering pads. But people are just thrilled to share it with others because we see how much it does for us in our lives.
Real quick before I let you get out of here, what do you do when you're not climbing?
I'm going to school for massage therapy. I graduate in June. I'm looking forward to that. I was the prior owner of Apex Adventure Alliance, which I happy to pass along to the team manager there, their guide service out at Devil's Lake. And I am trying to do as much as I can in my year term as president to really open up climbing opportunities for Wisconsinites and make sure that they remain available for the future generations.
Thanks for joining us. Jacob Crone, president, Wisconsin Climbers Association. Real quick, where can they find you?
You can find us at wisconsinclimbers.com or search for us online at Wisconsin Climbers Association.
All right, what's your going away message about climbing? What do they need to know? Real quick.
Keep exploring and believe that you can do it, because you probably can.
Awesome message. Thanks for listening to WTMJ Outdoors.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Thanks for tuning in to WTMJ Outdoors. Awesome to talk about anything happening outdoors in Wisconsin. This is a good one. I actually learned to ski a long time ago. I'm going to ask my guest, Joel Shapiro, Vice President of Wisconsin Water Ski Federation. Morning, Joel.
Good morning, Steve.
All right, so My experience with water skiing, I did a lot of it when I was a kid. My neighbors had boats, and they taught me to water ski. And then as I became an adult, we used to make it every weekend. We'd go out to some of the lakes in the Pewaukee area, Conemaugh area. And that's sort of a classic Wisconsin tale of water skiing, right?
Yes, it sure is.
So as somebody who leads an organization, where are we at with water skiing? What's the popularity? Is it more than it used to be? Is it less? Where are we at?
Well, sadly, Steve, it's actually less, and a lot of that is just driven by the cost of the boats and the shift from traditional water skiing to more wake sports. Mm-hmm. You've ever heard of the wake surfing?
And, oh, yeah.
You know, it first started out 25, 30 years ago with wakeboarding, and now it's moved to more of the wake sports that are almost directly behind the boat. And then there's a lot of controversy over those types of boats that put up the huge wakes and so to some extent, the sport is shifting more towards the wake sports, but participation is lower, obviously, because I believe that there is a barrier to entry.
For most people, it's my story. So I went up north with some friends. Green Lake was where we went. The classic, maybe this is a classic, maybe it's not. I got up on my first attempt, and they pulled me up, and I was a little kid. I was probably, I don't know, 9 or 10 years old. But they forgot to remind me to let go of the rope once I fell. So I skimmed under the surface of the water or the top of the water for a while. Sort of a common foible when you're learning how to water ski.
Yeah, that would be a very common story among many tourists and even residents throughout the state who, you know, take a weekend vacation, whether it be up north or to the nearby lake or something, where they have an opportunity to try water skiing once or twice in their lives.
So as somebody who is one of the leaders of an organization that promotes water skiing, what's the positives for people? You know, we could talk about some of the other stuff that's related to that, that's sort of the, you know, the explosion of the new technologies. But for a lot of people, this is a tradition like no other in the summers of Wisconsin.
Yeah, water skiing is extremely popular in Wisconsin, primarily because of a couple of reasons. Number one, water skiing was invented on Lake Pepin, which is in neighboring Minnesota. And Lake Pepin actually has, it's right on the border. So it was invented on the Minnesota side. But Tommy Bartlett, the Tommy Bartlett show, is probably the single greatest contributing factor to the popularity of water skiing in Wisconsin. A lot of that is driven by his traveling show before he called Wisconsin Dells home. And then, of course, at an amateur level, the Minocqua Bats were one of the earliest show ski teams. And they, you know, performed in the summers throughout the 1950s and 1960s and had a great relationship with the Pope family, who owned Cypress Gardens down in Florida. So there was a lot of skiers who would come up from Florida in the summertime, and Wisconsin skiers would go down to Florida in the wintertime. But gradually, that type of water skiing, show skiing, where you're doing pyramids and barefooting and ballet lines and jumping, so you're basically doing every type of water skiing you can possibly think of, would be in a show. And that's what makes water skiing popular in Wisconsin, is that show skiing. And a lot of that is just driven by the entire family can be involved, and ultimately you create lifelong friendships through this type of water skiing.
So everybody from Wisconsin remembers the Tommy Bartlett show at the Dells, and then and before that the traveling show. So are the shows still around to some degree, or is it more the, I know there's competitions still that happen, right?
Yeah, so the Wisconsin State Water Ski Show Championships is the largest show ski competition in the world. Typically anywhere from 24 to 27 teams every summer, third weekend in July, and it's always held at Lake Wazeecha in Wisconsin Rapids, hosted by the Aqua Skiers. There are over 30 other water ski show teams throughout the state that perform everything from a handful of shows to as many as 30 shows. You've got Janesville, Wisconsin, Madison, La Crosse, the Milwaukee area, southeastern Wisconsin, in Twin Lakes and Burlington and Whitewater, Elkhorn, Shawano, Wrightstown, which is Green Bay, up in Eau Claire. So there's teams all over, and then there's several smaller teams that have a really good following in what we call the Northwoods, like the Minocqua in Eagle Lake and Three Lakes area.
Joel Shapiro, Vice President, Wisconsin Water Ski Federation, joining us on WTMJ Outdoors. We'll take a quick break here. Lots more to talk about with Joel after the break on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Joel Shapiro, Vice President, Wisconsin Water Ski Federation, is our guest on the program today. All right, so tell me about your organization, Wisconsin Water Ski Foundation. What are some of the things you work on your in your day-to-day life?
Sure. So the Wisconsin Water Ski Federation was started in 1960 just to bring skiers together and, like, camaraderie and good sportsmanship. And it's designed to support all disciplines show ski is one of them, but traditional three event with tricks, slalom, and jump were the foundation of the organization early on. And there's also 10 collegiate water ski teams in the state of Wisconsin. There's a pretty good barefoot water ski following. And then in the last 10 years or so, adaptive water skiing has come on pretty strong.
And what is that?
That allows anyone with a potential disability to participate. So we have adaptive equipment that allows somebody who maybe is paralyzed from the waist down to participate in our sport by using a sit ski. We've even had teams take visually impaired individuals water skiing. They have to be accompanied side by side with another person. But it's just giving people an opportunity to water ski who would not otherwise have such an opportunity, or maybe they never thought it was possible.
I wanted to ask you this at the beginning, but I forgot to. So I'm going to ask you now. For people who have never water skied before, and I, like I said, I did a lot of it in my you know, late teens and certainly into my 20s. It became sort of a regular weekend thing that we did in the summers. What's the appeal of water skiing? So how do we drive people back to this sport?
The appeal, really, on the show ski side, like I said, you can get the entire family involved, everything from boat driving to being on stage to behind the scenes with sound and announcing, fundraising, helping out with the organization, and then, of course, participating in the actual water skiing. And then from there, when young people grow up and go away to college, they can participate in a collegiate team. and hopefully they'll plant roots back in the state and have a family of their own and get involved in show skiing. But I think that's the way to drive people back to the sport. And our state, we have 2,500 members of the Wisconsin Water Ski Federation, which accounts for about 20% of the overall national membership in USA Water Ski and Wake Sports. And a lot of the show ski teams host learn to ski clinics to give just the general public an opportunity to learn how to ski. Most of the time it's kids and teenagers, but sometimes you get some adults who want to try it out too. But we will have several dozen learn to ski events and give over 500 people an opportunity to learn how to water ski this summer just in the state of Wisconsin. And that's how we continue to drive growth throughout the state in water skiing.
How do folks find out about your organization?
They can go to waterski.org.
Well, that's easy. All right, so a couple things that I recall. So when I learned to slalom ski, it was the old drop-a-ski method. Is that still people still doing that, or is it more advisable when you're learning how to water ski, or once you've figured out the two ski method, to just go up on one ski? Because I learned to do it both ways.
Yeah, that's still a preferred method of teaching is progression, right? So you start out learn how to two ski, and then eventually you're going to drop a ski and keep your balance and slalom, and then when you get good enough, then it's time to start doing a deep water start or a dock start with just one ski.
And my producer was very interested in the barefoot part of that. How common is it that the people barefoot ski? I know I've seen video of it a lot. I didn't have any friends that could barefoot, but I know it's like reaching the top echelon of water skiing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's what most people would probably call an extreme part of our sport, barefoot water skiing and jumping. But barefooting is best learned. A lot of ski boats can be equipped with what we call a boom. It's a steel rod that sticks out the side of the boat, and you can learn right next to the boat on water skiing, and then you can get on barefooting, and then you can get a short extension to barefoot off of that boom, and then you learn how to do it long line. But you typically would start out on skis. For example, you might start out on two skis, drop one, slalom, and then the boat speed picks up, and then you what we call step off. So you plant one foot in the water, and then you step out of that ski and barefoot away. So there is a learning curve on that.
I was just going to say, there's got to be a learning curve on that one.
For sure. You will take a lot of face plants in learning how to barefoot. That's for sure.
I love it. All right. I got about 30 seconds left, but I want to give you a chance. What should people know about water skiing? Why do we need to bring this great sport back to where it used to be?
Oh, wow. Water skiing is not only great exercise, but it's a family-oriented sport where everybody can get involved we guarantee that you will build lifelong friendships as a result of being involved in any discipline of water skiing. And Wisconsin has been recognized as the show ski capital of the world. We like to call ourselves the water ski capital of the world, even though our friends down in Florida proclaim that. But we've got a lot more participants, and we'd love to have more.
All right, I want to see people get back to the old-fashioned way of water skiing. Joel Shapiro, Vice President of Wisconsin Water Ski Federation. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors on 620 WTMJ.